A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
The truth is the most convincing story that maps onto reality, and that's why the central narrative is falling apart.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
We must see the central narrative for the fiction that it is. We are Americans.
While elections are sometimes messy, this was a secure election.
The founders began the fight for human liberty and self-governance, and it's up to us to finish the job.
I tell you what, we are in a truth emergency right now.
This is the end game.
It's Friday, March 29th, 2024, the 1,164th day of dystopia. I'm your moderator, Chris Paul. Let's be reasonable. A warm welcome and hello to all of you listening to the podcast on the day of its release. The only way to do that is by becoming a paid subscriber at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as little as $50 a year or $5 a month, and in doing so, you will be supporting me, the work I do, and this show as it expands. And if you can't or you simply don't want to, continue listening to the podcast for free. A couple days later, on a wide variety of podcast platforms, and of course Rumble, all I ask is that you share it with your friends. You can find the links to the podcast, the writing, the social media, and the merch site by visiting linktree.com/imyourmoderator. All right, so Friday shows, it's nice to have a little fun, and there is nothing more fun than pure, unbridled regime panic, especially when it comes in the form of them kind of rerouting their plans and needing to communicate the new plans to everybody just to get some feedback, see if people are prepared to accept the new plan, to go along with it. They need to message out to all of the elite corners, see the message spread far and wide, and gauge the reaction. And so they will always admit their panic and then say, but wait, we've totally got it covered. Here's how it's going to go. What do you think? It kind of makes me think of when we were kids and you have to clean up your room before your parents get home. And you spend the whole time playing video games, and then your parents get home. You hear the garage door open. You're like, oops, I didn't clean up my room. And then you grab everything you can find and throw it behind a chair in the corner. Like, they're never going to see that. And then they walk in, they immediately see it, and you're like, no, what I did was consolidate everything because I'm building a machine so that I can move all of that laundry into the laundry room. For you, Mom, don't you understand? I did it for you. There's nothing wrong here. I've created a situation where everything is about to be more right. Did you just say you're proud of me? I'm grounded. Oh, okay. Okay, got it. Well, we had some really beautiful pieces of that this week. And so let's start with this one from the New York Times on Tuesday. Obama, fearing Biden lost to Trump, is on the phone to strategize. So good old Barack Hussein Obama, a.k.a. Barry Sotoro, is trying to make sure that he can secure another term as shadow president behind a fake president that may unfortunately have to be Joe Biden once again. Barack Hussein Obama needs that fourth term as president. You got to get this whole thing reset. You got to make it great. You can't do that in just 4 years or 8 years. You need extra terms. And Hillary was supposed to get it done in 2016, and she didn't. So now he's just using Joe as a skin suit. It doesn't seem like they're going to be able to swap Big Mike in there. And so Obama is just preparing to play the hand he's been dealt. And it's sad, isn't it? Despite Obama's popularity and Joe Biden's popularity, I mean, he received the most votes of all time, 81 million real lawful American votes. It's sad, considering their popularity, that our system just doesn't allow them to advance their very popular agenda. And because our system makes it so hard for the democratic will of the people to be enacted, well, they've got to censor us and propagandize us and persecute us politically, hoping to imprison us. If that doesn't work, I guess they could depopulate us. But no matter what, the agenda's got to march forward. And if it has to march forward in the person of this demented old pervert, well, I guess these are the cards we've been dealt. To the New York Times. As the election approaches, President Biden is making regular calls to former President Barack Obama to catch up on the race or to talk about family. But Mr. Obama is making calls of his own to Jeffrey Zients, the White House chief of staff, and to top aides at the Biden campaign to strategize and relay advice. And you gotta love how the New York Times frames this as Biden and Obama just being good pals. Oh, they just talk all the time. Remember, they were on that long-running television show together where we presented them as friends and confidants and equals. Well, they're really like that in real life, and they're still like that in real life even 8 years later. Sure, they're two presidents, but they talk about family and they talk about basketball and hip-hop music because Barack Obama is black and Joe Biden, oh, he knows how to talk to the blacks. That's the Obama-Biden relationship we've been given, and it's still that way. Just calling each other to catch up. They want to strategize together. You see, Barack Obama, he wants to get Joe Biden's thoughts on how things are going. This level of engagement illustrates Mr. Obama's support for Mr. Biden, but also what one of his senior aides characterized as Mr. Obama's grave concern that Mr. Biden could lose to former President Donald J. Trump. How? How is that possible? Joe Biden went into office as the most popular president who had ever been elected. 81 million real lawful American votes. And then his opponent and all his supporters told the big lie, angering their fellow Americans because they were attempting to tear down democracy. They tried to overthrow the country with the very violent insurrection of January 6th. And then on January 20th, with the entire city surrounded by fencing and soldiers, Joe Biden was inaugurated president. Lady Gaga even sang in a Hunger Games outfit. And Trump and his supporters, they don't even recognize that as legitimate. But Trump and his supporters are only like 30% of the Republican Party, which means they're basically nobody. They don't even exist. Okay, fine. So 75 million is kind of a lot, but it's not 81 million. And look at all the things Joe Biden has done. He's so much more popular now than he was in 2020. The nation wants us to implement this agenda, which is why they support us so much. And yes, Joe Biden won by a lot, and that's what makes him legitimately the president. But also, with his popular agenda, people do get tired of, just life. Sometimes presidents aren't as popular after being super popular and then doing all these incredibly popular things. And, you know, sometimes the guy that they beat by so much just catches up to them while they're being great somehow. Usually by rigging the whole system and committing great crimes. Let's continue with the New York Times. I mean, it makes sense so far. The aide, who is not authorized to speak publicly, darn it, I thought they would have someone on the record, said that Mr. Obama has always been worried about a Biden loss. And so, the aide added, he is prepared to, quote, eke it out. Alongside his former vice president in an election that could come down to slim margins in a handful of states. Oh, the slim margins in a handful of states thing again for the zillionth election in a row. Sure, Biden wins by millions and millions and millions of votes in the smart states like California and New York. But because of our antiquated system with the Electoral College, we need to win those dumb states, too. And the dumb states are so much harder to win, which is why it's always very, very close and sometimes takes days or weeks to make those dumb states smart enough to vote for us. Perhaps for the first time, the two are on the same page about Mr. Biden's future. In a sign of things to come, they are to appear together with former President Bill Clinton at a major fundraiser for the Biden campaign at Radio City Music Hall in New York on Thursday. It was not always this way. In 2015, as Mr. Biden was grieving the loss of his eldest son, Beau, and contemplating running for the presidency, it was Mr. Obama who gently suggested that it was not his time. Oh yeah, that's how things work. Just a gentle nudge to say, hey Joe, you know how it is. You need to step aside or that psychopath Hillary is going to kill everyone. So Barack decided it was not Joe's time. And then it looked like it was going to be Bernie's time, but Barack decided it was not going to be Bernie's time either. They called Jim Clyburn down in South Carolina and say, hey, Jim, turn on the election fraud machine. Don't worry. We'll just tell them that the blacks love this homicidal maniac. And if that doesn't work, in a few years, we'll tell everyone the blacks love this Klansman. But let's get back to this tale of two great men just palling around deciding who runs the country. In a memoir, Promise Me, Dad, Mr. Biden wrote that Mr. Obama told him that if he, quote, could appoint anyone to be president for the next 8 years, end quote, it would have been Mr. Biden. The vice president wrote that, quote, the mere possibility of a presidential campaign, which Beau wanted, gave us purpose and hope, a way to defy the fates, end quote. Now, here's the thing. There's no way Joe Biden wrote that. There's also no way Joe Biden felt that. But it is worth noting that it's been 50 years of Joe Biden in politics exploiting the deaths of his immediate family members. And he's constantly lying about those deaths, too. It's such a strange sort of thing to be wrong about or forgetful about or lying about. Why would you want people to believe untrue stories about how your immediate family members, who you exploit for political gain, died? But after discussing the stakes with Obama, he took himself out of contention and stepped aside for Hillary Clinton, seen by the Obama White House as the far stronger candidate. Oh yes, because she was a woman. The decision bred distrust and lasting resentment among some of Mr. Biden's aides. Several of them work in the White House today, and they believe that Mr. Obama and his advisors sidelined Mr. Biden, whom they think could have changed the course of history and beaten Mr. Trump in 2016. These people really are totally delusional. In 2019, when Mr. Biden entered the race against then-President Trump, Mr. Obama withheld his endorsement until after the Democratic primary, though he privately worked to clear a path for Mr. Biden. So after going with Hillary and Hillary losing, them realizing that Mr. Biden would have been the stronger candidate in 2016, that still didn't cause them to line up behind Joe Biden for 2020. That totally makes sense. He also gave his blessing for the Biden campaign to use their interactions in the Obama White House in campaign materials, including footage of when Mr. Obama surprised his vice president with the Presidential Medal of Freedom shortly before leaving office. In the 16 years since their first campaign together, the relationship has been defined by its odd couple characteristics: the Harvard-trained professor and the guy from Scranton. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee chairman, who went on to serve, a former junior member. The cool head and the Irish temper. Ah, they're so good and personable. Don't you just want to, I don't know, traffic some humans with these guys? It took Mr. Obama time to warm to Mr. Biden, who was brought on as the Washington elder to help the exciting but inexperienced young president-to-be. Mr. Biden struggled with being second in command from the moment he joined the ticket. Ah, yes, because his prior failed presidential runs were proof that he actually should be the guy in charge. The Obama brain trust Mr. Biden and his allies felt had no interest in taking strategic advice or additional requests from Mr. Biden, who had lost two prior presidential primary campaigns. On occasion, members of the Biden team, including Mr. Biden himself, groused about his second-class treatment by the Obama team, an elite and Ivy-educated machine. Ah, yes, the very smartest commies. They didn't want to take advice from dumbass Joe Biden. One former campaign official who spoke on the condition of anonymity recalled a moment of drawing the former vice president's ire. After being asked to sign off on a statement on immigration policy, Mr. Biden snapped. "You mean the one I've had for 25 years or this guy's?" Ah, yes, that's old Joe Biden. What a fiery, fiery fellow, wanting credit for his intellectual work, despite his famous history of stealing other people's speeches. Why would someone have to relay that story on the condition of anonymity? It makes it sound like the New York Times writers just made it up. Over time, the two gelled, with Mr. Biden leveraging his relationships on Capitol Hill to steer a massive stimulus package through Congress in the Great Recession and to push the Affordable Care Act over the finish line. He famously congratulated Mr. Obama as the president signed the health bill into law, whispering, "Mr. President, this is a big deal," with an inserted adjective not suited for national television. He said, "big effing deal." Why the New York Times does not make that clear. Very strange. The two were not aligned on everything. Mr. Biden was vehemently against Mr. Obama's decision to send more American troops to Afghanistan in 2009, a disagreement that would become a focal point for Robert Hur, the special counsel who investigated the president's handling of classified documents, a classified and handwritten document memo Mr. Biden sent to Mr. Obama on Afghanistan had been found at Mr. Biden's residence in Delaware by investigators. So Biden had a memo that he sent to Obama. Wonder how he got it back. Wonder why he took it home. Did he want proof that he was against Obama's decision at the time? In a lengthy interview last October with Mr. Hur, Mr. Biden hinted at their opposites attract dynamic during a portion of the discussion that was meant to probe how often and in what manner he spoke with other senators about sensitive matters, including the Iran nuclear deal. "The bad joke is, with President Obama, I would always say to him, Mr. President, all politics is personal. Mr. Biden said at one point, explaining to Mr. Herr why he regularly invited senators to breakfast at the vice president's residence. Mr. Biden never explained the joke, but his recollection of the advice he gave to Mr. Obama highlighted a major difference between the two men, at least as far as Mr. Biden was concerned. He had nurtured relationships on Capitol Hill, something Mr. Obama had comparatively little interest in doing. I wonder why Joe Biden didn't explain that joke. I guess he thinks it should seem pretty obvious what he means, so what does he mean? All politics is personal. Is Joe Biden suggesting that the way things get done is through the personal deal-making, the corruption and compromise that is known or shared or facilitated between people with long-standing relationships based on that corruption and compromise? I mean, that is legitimately Joe Biden's history in politics. That is what his political history is. For-profit deal-making based on corruption and compromise. They are there to facilitate the implementation of the global regime agenda by whatever means possible. They're already all corrupted and compromised. People higher than them in the regime hierarchy are aware of it. So as long as they continue to effectively propel the regime agenda forward, they're going to be taken care of and looked out for so they won't get in trouble for the things they're doing. We want to pretend that's not how it works, but of course that's exactly how it works, and that's how it works in the party of false decorum paradigm as well. Back to the New York Times. Aides to Mr. Biden say their relationship morphed from friendly to almost familial after Beau Biden died. When Mr. Obama delivered a eulogy for Beau in June 2015, the president looked down from the dais and told Mr. Biden that he and his family were, quote, honorary members of the Biden clan. And the Biden family rule applies. We're always here for you. We always will be. My word as a Biden, Mr. Obama said, a moment that has been described by people close to Mr. Biden as a major turning point for the president, who was stunned by Mr. Obama's publicly affectionate remarks. So Beau Biden died at an unusually early age, and Joe Biden continues to exploit that death, mentioning it often for sympathy, misdescribing it often for political purposes, much like he did with the death of his first wife in a car accident that Joe Biden continues to lie about for some reason. And it's funny because that death happened right before Joe became a senator. In fact, Joe got sworn in by Beau Biden's bedside in the hospital after that accident that killed Joe Biden's first wife. And then here we are with the death of that same Beau Biden. And all of a sudden, Joe Biden has finally submitted. Now he is part of the program. Now he and Obama are bonded over Beau Biden's death. It was a turning point in their relationship. That is when they developed a true understanding. But during his interview with Mr. Herr, Mr. Biden explained another crucial disconnect. Mr. Obama's differing view on Mr. Biden's political future. Mr. Obama and his advisors had chosen Mr. Biden for his policy experience, but also because he had what the Obama team thought were limited career prospects beyond the vice presidency. Mr. Biden recalled to Mr. Herr that while he was pondering a presidential run in 2015, quote, there were still a lot of people at the time when I got out of the Senate that were encouraging me to run in this period, except the president, he said, a reference to Mr. Obama. I'm not, and not a mean thing to say, he just thought that she had a better shot of winning the presidency than I did, a reference to Mrs. Clinton. People who were in the White House at the time argue that the timeline was not so simple. This notion that there was a red carpet available that, you know, Barack Obama blocked is just not based in reality. David Plouffe, a former senior advisor to Mr. Obama, said in an interview. David Plouffe, by the way, is the former Obama advisor who works for Mark Zuckerberg at the Center for Tech and Civic Life. He also wrote a book called A Citizen's Guide to Beating Donald Trump, where he basically laid out the election fraud strategy in 2020 and believed, by the way, that they needed about 65 million votes to beat Donald Trump. Well, they got 81 million. Isn't that amazing with the data and access that people like David Plouffe have working for not only Barack Obama, but Mark Zuckerberg? He's just off in his goal by 16 million votes. It's incredible, especially because there's no question that all 81 million of those votes were real lawful American votes and that there's no proof of widespread fraud everywhere. In fact, Donald Trump lost all his cases. And you know what Bill Barr said and what Chris Krebs said? And anyway, even if he didn't get 81 million real lawful American votes, there's no way that it's possible to steal 6 million votes across the country. So he definitely still must have gotten more than Donald Trump got, right? I mean, it can't all be fake. Yeah, sure it can't. David Plouffe's goal was 65 million, but 81 just turned up out of nowhere. That's how unpopular and dangerous Donald Trump was. Also worth noting, by the way, that in 2016, David Plouffe tweeted at one point, "It is not enough to simply beat Trump. He must be destroyed thoroughly. His kind must not rise again." And I remember on Election Day in 2016, David Plouffe was on with the Pod Bros from Pod Save America, calling people who were growing increasingly concerned throughout the day bedwetters because he was certain that Hillary was going to win no matter what. You got to wonder what kind of information he must have had beforehand that would lead him to be so confident and cavalier on election day while it looked like everything was falling apart. But back to the New York Times. Mr. Plouffe said that Mrs. Clinton and Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont were already strong contenders for the Democratic nomination when Mr. Biden was considering a run. Joe Biden would have run for president for the third time for the nomination, would not have succeeded, and would have never been president, Mr. Plouffe said. And that's interesting. It sounds like he's trying to intimate that this was kind of their strategy. We're going to let Hillary Clinton go out and fight this fight. And if it doesn't go well, we'll just plug old Joe in there later. And to make sure they don't look like they're tipping the scales, they're just going to go ahead and not endorse Joe Biden ever. Interesting. Still, White House officials and those working for Mr. Obama say that any lingering distrust at the staff level has dissipated, given what they see as the urgent need for Mr. Biden to beat Mr. Trump in November. Privately, Democrats close to Mr. Obama said that their concerns over Mr. Biden's prospects have been assuaged somewhat by the president's confrontational performance during his State of the Union address. So he has given the same State of the Union speech for years in a row now, kind of always hinting that he's actually the one with the pro-America agenda. He's the one who understands how things around the world are really supposed to work. Donald Trump and all the dummies that support him, they don't realize that Mr. Biden is actually the one that's getting all the good things done for them. Total inversion always. But they made sure to get Joe Biden some extra Adderall or whatever they pump into him so that he could be high energy and super angry, scream his entire State of the Union speech, so much so that virtually everyone is embarrassed for him. But that was their plan, so the media could present Joe Biden as ready for the fight, strong and passionate and motivated and driven, all of it rooted in a firm understanding of the unique danger that Donald Trump presents. He must be faced head on. And old Scranton Joe is the only one scrappy enough to do it. Joe Biden's State of the Union speech was so powerful among the very tiny circle of totally delusional communists that align with Barack Obama that it has restored their faith in Joe Biden's ability. That is what we are supposed to pretend. Everyone watched the State of the Union We are supposed to believe that there is a group of people, and true insiders at that, who think that Joe Biden's performance was so strong that he has convinced the country he's the man to take on Donald Trump. And that no matter what doubts they might have about Joe's ability, Donald Trump represents a real danger. We are supposed to pretend that they have made that case convincingly now, based on Joe's speech. An email sent by Mr. Obama's alumni group and obtained by the New York Times said as much. "We hope you are as fired up as we are after the State of the Union," the group wrote in an email to supporters. "President Biden is ready." Oh, wow. Did Mr. Obama's alumni group send that out in an email? So powerful. So what does the New York Times want us to believe? They want us to believe that Joe Biden's recent performance has convinced the most important decision maker that he is the right man for the job again. Despite the country learning that all the rumors about Joe Biden and his family and his family's business and his history and his racism and his incompetence and the fact that he can't stop sniffing kids, despite the country now understanding that all of that really just is Joe Biden, he's stronger than ever. Stronger than he ever was when he received 81 million real lawful American votes. Now he's got Barack Obama's support. The mainstream media has run some stories this week about how Joe Biden seems like he might be gaining back the momentum in the polls. And if you are Trump deranged, that's all you need. Oh, so you're saying he has a chance? Well, if he has a chance, then it's a sure thing because, I mean, everybody knows that we steal elections. These are the sorts of stories that generate great positivity among those in the uniparty hate movement. They believe that everyone is finally realizing how great they are again. Every now and then they lose faith in the greatness of the elites, but they always come back. Or at least we're going to tell everybody that they have come back. Because if we can't make them believe that, there's no way we're going to make them believe that Joe Biden somehow received 90 or 100 million real lawful American votes. Whatever it takes. How about some more of that sweet, sweet global regime panic? This is from Project Syndicate, which is an outlet that just proudly and openly does the work of the global regime. They do not even try to pretend that they are some sort of legitimate, objective news outlet. It's just them pitching the regime agenda. I've shared their work many times on this show, but not recently. Recall, this is from their Wikipedia, by the way. Project Syndicate receives grants from George Soros's Open Societies Foundation, the Politiken Foundation in Denmark, Die Zeit Stiftung, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Now, you might say Soros and Gates, that is some pretty extreme global regime communism. This must be an outlet for leftists, and it is. But if you're a normie who, for instance, thinks that globalist neocons are somehow conservative and not actually Trotskyites, you might be confused that this article in Project Syndicate is written by a man named Richard Haass, who is President Emeritus of the Council on Foreign Relations and a senior counselor at Centerview Partners, who previously served as Director of Policy Planning for the U.S. State Department from 2001 to 2003. Wait a second, isn't that whole 9/11 era? Oh yeah, it is exactly that. And was President George W. Bush's special envoy to Northern Ireland. So Council on Foreign Relations and the Bush administration, and now he is penning op-eds for Project Syndicate. There are some interesting notes as well in Richard Haass's Wikipedia entry. In December 2021, Haass criticized the Biden administration's withdrawal from Afghanistan as, quote, "America first unilateralism in practice," end quote, indicating that Biden, quote, "did so in a Trumpian way, consulting minimally with others and leaving NATO allies to scramble," And it is funny, with devolution in the back of one's mind, to think about a globalist insider like Richard Haass arguing that Joe Biden is actually doing the foreign policy business of America First and the Trump administration. But going on in this Wikipedia entry, in April 2023, former U.S. officials, including Richard Haass, Charles Kupchan, Thomas Graham, and Mary Beth Long, among others, were reported to have conducted unofficial meetings with Russian diplomat Sergei Lavrov. And that is according to NBC News. Going on. In an extensive article published by the Council on Foreign Relations, Foreign Affairs, Haass and Kupchan detailed what they termed as, quote, a plan for getting from the battlefield to the negotiating table, end quote. These interactions were allegedly centered on adjusting U.S. policy with the intent of facilitating Russia's acquisition of Ukrainian territory, an action that is purportedly in violation of U.S. law. The engagement of former U.S. officials in informal dialogues with Russians has led to a schism among American diplomats, foreign policy academics, and national security experts. Michael McFaul, former U.S. ambassador to Russia under President Obama, voiced concern that conversations about potential resolutions involvement of Ukraine representatives could undermine the stance of the Biden administration, insisting that Ukraine's future can't be decided in back rooms. If you're having track two negotiations about how to end the war, Ukrainians have to be there, said McFaul. So Richard Haass and some other quote unquote foreign policy experts were conducting negotiations on behalf of the U.S. government? Well, how's that possible? On behalf of the Biden administration, doesn't sound exactly like Haass and crew are aligned with the Biden administration. But they're meeting with Lavrov. I mean, Sergei Lavrov is a serious man. Why is he meeting with these people? And who are they representing if they're not there on behalf of the Biden administration and they're not there on behalf of Ukraine or including actual Ukrainians in the conversation? And when you hear that, you gotta ask, why is anyone negotiating on behalf of Ukraine unless they're Ukrainian? It's like there's some other regime that actually runs Ukraine. And maybe that same regime runs the United States. And maybe Richard Haass serves that regime in a capacity that doesn't require interacting with the illegitimate and fake Biden administration. But that's all a conspiracy theory. Joe Biden received 81 million real lawful American votes and, of course, sits as a legitimate president who has his wits about him and very much has his finger not only on the button, but on the pulse of the American people. He's not only legitimate, he represents all of us and governs us with the consent of the people. He is there to implement our will as president and commander-in-chief of the military. And it just turns out that no one actually needs to get his input on anything ever. But let's hear what Richard Haass has to say in the pages of Project Syndicate. The headline, America's Year of Living Dangerously. Subheadline, if the United States is distracted and divided over the results of the presidential election in November, it will lack the focus and unity to act in the world. America's adversaries could be tempted to take advantage and press to achieve long-sought objectives. Now, if that is not full-on narrative seeding, I don't know what is. So let's hear about the future that Richard Haass and his global communist pals have planned for us. More than six dozen countries will hold elections this year, but none will be more consequential than the one scheduled for November in the United States. After all, what happens in the U.S. invariably has outsized impact, given America's economic, military, and diplomatic power and influence. Countries in both Europe and the Indo-Pacific count on the U.S. to guarantee their security, a guarantee they have not had reason to question for more than three quarters of a century. How about that? What was three quarters of a century ago? Oh, that was the end of World War II, when the global regime drew new borders on maps all across the world and decided that the United States of America would be the global police force to enforce all of those new borders that they've drawn. Why did we get to play that role as the world's new enforcer? Oh, because we, quote unquote, won World War II. And you got to understand, winning a world war is like being in a relay race. You just take the baton from the prior winners and you just keep going with their same program. That's how all those Nazis and commies and fascists in the global regime back then just kept on running things. They just moved around the world to countries of the quote-unquote West, and of course Israel, and just kept the whole program going. Three quarters of a century, we kept all of these areas safe, and they never had any reason to doubt that we would continue doing that. And apparently now, they have some reason to doubt that. Why would they doubt that? Oh, it's because Donald Trump might win. And if Donald Trump wins, then that whole situation changes. At some point, one might wonder, hey, is this the real problem they have with Donald Trump? We won't control the rest of the world anymore on behalf of this global regime? The argument that is made to us is that we control the rest of the world on your behalf. That's why you have nice things, because we exploit the rest of the world and we share that wealth from our plunder with you. That is apparently what it requires to have normal lives in America, which is weird because in other parts of the world, they have all sorts of things and barely even work. And that's on top of the fact that they don't really have natural resources. They don't have the land mass and the ability and the innovation and the drive that America has. And they still have nice, normal lives. How does it happen? It is such an odd argument to make to people. They are basically suggesting, oh yeah, the entire country would be an absolute failure if we weren't using it to control the entire earth and share the benefits of our plunder. There's no other way to achieve a healthy and successful society like the one we have right here. What Haas is describing is the end of the one world international liberal rules-based order, also known as our democracy worldwide. Moreover, unlike most presidential elections in American history, this is one in which the differences between the two likely major party candidates far outweigh their similarities. Much the same can be said about which of the two parties wins control of the Senate and the House of Representatives. And it's worth noting always that this is a person who absolutely understands that our elections are decided from above and not by the people who believe they're voting. What makes the coming year so fraught for America and the rest of the world, though, is the reality that American democracy faces multiple hurdles. Indeed, the near future consists of three distinct phases, each with its own challenges and dangers. The first phase is already underway and will continue through Election Day, November 5th. The problem is already in plain sight. With politics taking priority over policy, it has become nearly impossible to enact important legislation. So, the U.S. government has ground to a halt, not due to its illegitimacy, not due to the fact that none of the American people actually want them to continue implementing their agenda, but because of political concerns in an election year. That is why Republicans are unable to go along with the uniparty agenda in Richard Haas's telling. If it wasn't for the politics of it all, which are Donald Trump's fault, it would be easy for them to implement their agenda, but they are getting blocked, and Haas has to tell the wannabe elites of the world, who are Project Syndicate's key audience, why it's going to be okay. He goes on. Military aid to Ukraine has been put on hold because the Republican-controlled House, following the lead of Donald Trump, the party's presumptive presidential nominee, refuses to approve it. 2 years of successfully resisting Russian aggression in Europe have been put at risk. Now, again, Haas certainly knows that they have not spent 2 years successfully resisting Russian aggression. But they can't admit that because if they lose and fail at everything they do all the time, it is awfully difficult to maintain the air of elitism and expertise. House Republicans also refused to pass legislation that would improve security at the country's southern border. In this case, because Trump apparently believes that the influx of migrants weakens public support for President Joe Biden. The political dynamics could make it impossible for the U.S. to maintain, much less expand, immigration policies that have done so much to contribute to the country's economic success. He is arguing explicitly for open borders, while at the same time trying to blame Trump for the lack of security at the border. All of this is premised on the idea that this border security package that establishment Republicans wanted to pass in the unipartisan compromise somehow created actual security at the border. Haas wants this legislation passed because he wants to increase the surveillance state at the border with the intent of eventually turning that inward on the American people. Richard Haas is not one of the American people. He does not care about the interests of the American people. He wants the American people controlled in the exact same way he wants the people of the rest of the world controlled. They are trying to implement a one world order, the same system in countries all across the world to eventually control all the people of the world. When neocons are warmongers and tell you that they don't care about deaths in Iraq or Syria or Libya or Gaza for that matter, while they also support one world multiculturalism, you gotta understand they don't care about your life any more than they care about those other lives. They just don't have to kill you right now to complete their projects. This isn't an exaggeration. This is the necessary outcome of their agenda. And it's not like they're bashful about it. He is actually pretending to want to solve the border problem while arguing that our immigration policies, as they have grown and expanded and should continue to expand, are actually helping America's economic success. And by that, he means that the slave trade provides the available labor for global regime connected transnational corporations to continue building the world the global regime wants to see built in America. They continue to flood money into these projects in America, which for people like Richard Haas means the American economy is growing. Therefore, all of the American people should be happy about that status. But let's continue. The second distinct set of challenges will follow Election Day. The peaceful transfer of power, a hallmark of the American system, can no longer be assumed. The 75-day window between election and inauguration could well become the most perilous phase of a dangerous year. The violent insurrection of January 6, 2021 occurred during this interval. And I think he means the very violent insurrection. I don't know why Richard Haas would feel the need to diminish the violence of that day. It's the very violent insurrection, not the violent insurrection. Thank you very much. But according to Richard Haas, we have always had a peaceful transfer of power. That is, except when Richard Haas's pals go ahead and, like, you know, execute a president, for instance, or, like, you know, steal an election, or, like, you know, stage color revolutions to destabilize societies and overthrow governments here, just as they do in the rest of the world. But yes, the peaceful transfer of power has always been a hallmark of the American system. Or so we've always been told, same as our election integrity. The accurate counting and verification of ballots, which is carried out first at the state and then at the national level, will be imperative. As most readers will know, U.S. presidents are not elected on the basis of the national popular vote. Each of the 50 states tallies the votes cast there, and in all but two, whoever receives the most votes garners all of the state's electoral votes, equal to the size of its congressional delegation. For example, California, the most populous state, has 54 electoral votes, while six low-population states and the District of Columbia get three each. A candidate must have 270 electoral college votes to win. And for the record, this whole process, this transition in America, whatever this is, should not end until Washington, D.C. no longer has three electoral college votes. Back to the article. As we saw in 2020, though, it is possible that the results will be challenged. Legislation passed in late 2022 and signed into law by Biden makes it more difficult but not impossible to do so. Such challenges would be considered in a joint session of Congress, most likely on January 6, 2025, presided over by the sitting Vice President Kamala Harris. So they put laws in place to make it more difficult to challenge election results. But they got 81 million real lawful American votes. They just didn't want to see another very violent insurrection happen again. It's also strange that he says the joint session of Congress will most likely be on January 6th, 2025. When else would it be, Richard Haass? Do you have another plan in mind already? And of course they do. They always do. Here we go. In addition, there is the potential for political violence. It is most likely that the outcome will be decided by tens of thousands of votes out of more than 150 million cast in a handful of states. A close and contested result could well lead to civil disorder, especially if the process results in Biden's re-election and a loss for Trump. Isn't that amazing? They always frame it as Trump supporters ready to go be violent. As we've talked about this week, the Transition Integrity Project in 2020 was a plan that called for street violence from the left. And of course, it's leftist groups where street violence is carried out, organized, and sponsored. They don't have that on the Trump side, the America First side. Yeah, there are some fake groups that are said to be aligned with Trump, aligned with MAGA, but they are not. No one ever talks about the Proud Boys or the Oath Keepers or, what was it, the Boogaloo Boys that they scared everyone about in 2020. Who are these people? They have that Patriot Front group, the guys that always have masks covering their faces. Oh yes, they're all so aligned with MAGA principles. And of course, what Haass is doing here is playing on the emotions and the prejudices of the hate movement they've developed. He knows that people on his side will hear Trump supporters think about them losing an election that they believe they've won again because they always think they're cheated out of everything. Oh, they're such victims, even though they're all white males and the uneducated and uncivilized. They're all going to get so mad about losing another election that they're going to go out in the streets and just start committing violence all across the country. Meanwhile, the plans these people draw up all take political violence from their own side into account. They just say it's in response to what Trump and his supporters would have done. What is all but certain is that a country distracted and divided over the results of the election will lack the focus and unity to act in the world. America's adversaries could be tempted to take advantage and press to achieve long-sought objectives. So our foreign adversaries around the world, we are told that they are going to be attacking American interests during this period. And once that begins, we in America need to just get that whole election issue over and done with. Just have it decided. Joe Biden is the president. He might be in his lame duck term if Donald Trump won, but we're just going to say Donald Trump didn't win because these events going on around the world are so important that Joe Biden is going to need his undivided attention in order to deal with them. He is legitimately arguing that the election should just be decided the way they want. Otherwise, there will be chaos all over the world. Now, the thing is, you have to remember who Richard Haass thinks are America's adversaries. In his mind, the adversaries are the sovereign nationalist leaders around the world who are, in some sense at least, aligned with Donald Trump and the MAGA agenda. They want America to focus on America first, just like America wants these other countries to focus on themselves while we focus on ourselves. There is not going to be one centralizing, organizing force of the world as the global regime had intended. We are watching the emergence of the multipolar world order. So when Haass talks about all of this, you have to imagine that events like China eliminating the global regime from Taiwan will be framed as something that is terrible for America. Therefore, we need to immediately reinstall Joe Biden in office. But when that time comes, the response will be to make sure everybody understands, yeah, we actually don't need to get involved in that China-Taiwan thing. And we especially don't need to get involved in it so desperately that we just need to wrap up our election process in order to take care of these important concerns around the world. The third and final challenge will begin early next year on Inauguration Day, January 20th, 2025. If Biden is reelected, much will depend on whether his election is accepted by Trump supporters and on which party controls the Senate and the House. One can imagine a scenario in which little changes. Republican congressmen refuse to work across party lines to pass needed legislation. And here's the thing, Richard Haass, there's no such thing as needed legislation. What we should do is just remove all legislation that has ever been done. Let's go all the way back to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and we can just start forward from there once again. We will actually figure out which legislation is needed and go ahead and pass it. Because the goal is to have people like you, Richard Haass, no longer involved in any of the decision-making process whatsoever. And if we actually have legitimate elections, none of you will be involved in the process. The global regime and its agenda are failing worldwide as the multipolar world order emerges, and so they're certainly failing in the United States as well, and that's because no one wants this shit. A different sort of test faces America and the world if Trump regains the presidency. Trump has voiced skepticism of America's membership in NATO and even encouraged Russia to attack NATO members that do not spend enough on defense. And oh yes, that is totally what he was doing. He has threatened to levy 60% tariffs on Chinese imports while reportedly questioning whether the U.S. should defend Taiwan against Chinese aggression. He continues to show a penchant for autocrats and a disdain for America's democratic allies. And that, my friends, is globalist panic. He is asserting that all these things are somehow things that Americans should want or do want, and Donald Trump is just going to take them away. But Americans don't want it, and they should not want it. We should not be beholden to any of these other global powers, particularly not the centralizing global power, as we have been for decades, for centuries. People don't want to admit it, but we have never actually been all that independent. Yes, the U.S. has a system of checks and balances, but presidents enjoy great latitude when it comes to hiring and firing personnel and setting the policy agenda, especially if their party controls both chambers of Congress. If Republicans gain control of the executive and legislative branches, both the post-World War II international order and American democracy itself could come under enormous pressure. Yes, Richard Haass, that's true. You lose. Only Americans get to vote in November, but the rest of the world will feel the effects. As a result, America's year of living dangerously could easily become everyone's. Would that it be true, Richard Haass? Let's go. By the way, Richard Haass, his little picture under this article, it says, writing for Project Syndicate since 2000. Hey, that was the beginning of the Bush administration. So Richard Haass, from the Bush administration, a Colin Powell guy, a Council on Foreign Relations guy, has been writing for this globalist rag sponsored by Soros and Gates for 20 years? I thought George Bush was right wing. I thought they were all conservatives. I mean, neoconservative, that's what it's called, right? They must be conservative. Neo just means, that just means new. So there's like a new kind of conservative. And new conservative is kind of an oxymoron, like jumbo shrimp. But hey, new is better than old. So maybe it just means better conservative, like more conservative. And everybody tells us they're super right wing. I mean, they're very militaristic. So that's what neo means, just better conservatives. Oh, no, that's not what it means. It just means that they follow Trotsky. They are globalists. They always have been. They always will be. The panic is coming because now they're getting crushed. They're telling you about the options they still believe they have on the table. They can do whatever they can right now to diminish Donald Trump, to make Joe Biden look good, to steal the election, whatever's required. Maybe we can just get lucky and get it done now. We'll get all this legislation passed as soon as we kick out Speaker Mike Johnson, which the Republican establishment will help us do. Maybe then we can fund all the things we need, or maybe we can just force Mike Johnson to do it. And then there's that second period after the election until the inauguration. And during that period, well, we're going to see a lot of chaos all over the world. And we're going to tell you that because of that, we really got to put an end on this election thing. I know everybody just wants to make sure that their votes count, but we don't have time for that right now. We have problems in the world and someone's got to deal with them. I guess it's got to be Joe Biden again. We're just going to keep him in there. And if you've got a problem with that, well, we're going to say that you are insurrecting. And we're going to push all our leftist agitators and democratic terrorists out into the streets to provoke a civil war if that's what's necessary. And if none of that works and Donald Trump still takes power, well, then the whole thing's over. We're absolutely screwed. The post-World War II world order will end, as will the presence of quote-unquote our democracy in America. It's not me saying it. I mean, I have been saying it for 4 years. But it's Richard Haass saying it now. And I have to think he's right. Now, I have some family events over the weekend, so I'm going to shoot for getting an episode up on Monday, but I can't make any promises. I will be back for sure by Tuesday at the same reasonable time on the same reasonable podcast network. I don't have a network. Masks and lockdowns don't work. They lied to you about a pandemic. And Joe Biden will never be president.
In my mind, that's the end game.
If you're listening to this episode for free, you can support me and support the show and the work I do by signing up for a paid subscription at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as low as $50 a year or $5 a month. Comes out to under a quarter per episode, and you'll blast right through the paywall for all of the writing. The merch store is www.cancelcouture.com, and you can find everything else by heading to Linktree, linktree.com/I'm Your Moderator. And I'll see you soon, out on the range.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
In my mind, that's the end game.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to follow what I'm reading and thinking throughout the day, you can do that by downloading the Telegram Messenger app and going to t.me/I'mYourModerator. On social media, you can follow me on Truth Social, Getter, and Gab at I'm Your Moderator. I also have channels on Rumble and BitChute. If you'd like to follow the writing, you can find me at I'myourmoderator.substack.com. The merch site is cancelcouture.com or go direct shop.spreadshirt.com/cancel-couture. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, the best place to do that is Ko-Fi. Go to ko-fi.com/I'myourmoderator. And all of these details will appear in the show notes with each episode. I'll see you soon, down on the range. It's happening!